You're listening to Money Making Mothers with Carla Edwards, where we discuss the highs and lows of being a working parent, how to master the art of spinning plates, and to remind ourselves that just because you became a mother does not mean your dreams no longer exist. You can have it all. Hi everyone, welcome to this week's episode of Money Making Mothers, where I'm joined by the incredible Samantha Mitchum. And in this episode, we discuss how you go from being employed to self-employed. Now, it is one scary jump to make, but it will pay off. The benefits that can come for it: more time, living your life the way you want to live it, having more value for yourself and your services. And hopefully someone listening will get the balls to be able to do what they've always wanted to do and live their dream.
Good morning. So my name's Sam Mitchum and I'm an AAT licensed accountant. I formed my business SJCM Accountancy in early 2019, having spent over 12 years employed in accountancy practice. I'm enjoying the freedom of running my own business, providing clients with everything from bookkeeping and payroll through to final accounts and compliance. And I've got one daughter, Bonnie May, and she's just turned 9.
Oh my God, I love that name.
Thank you.
Gorgeous. So thanks for coming on, Sam. So tell me first, what gave you the push to go from being employed to being self-employed?
Yeah, of course. So for me, there was kind of two things behind me going self-employed. I'd spent 12 years working in accountancy practice and working for other people. I'd obviously had a child during that time and I wanted the full flexibility, which I'm sure is kind of the reason that a lot of us do it as parents. So I wanted the full flexibility. I felt like there's so much that you can miss out on by working for somebody else when you've got a young child. So as much as employers can be understanding, I was kind of sick of that feeling of almost like a naughty school child having to ask to leave early, or there's another event at school that I really want to go and watch. And I just thought to myself, do you know what? She's not going to be young forever. She's not going to be young for very long at all. And I think like once they get to high school age, you very much kind of, you know, you become a different kind of parent because they don't have all these events at school that you're invited along to. So that was one side to it. The other side to it from a business point of view was that I was seeing the accountancy industry become very technology based. Obviously, we have all the cloud technology now. We can do Zoom meetings. We're not face to face as much, which is all really positive. And it's obviously the way that the world is going in business. But I felt like the client care aspect was kind of slipping away from the industry. So what I wanted to bring back for my clients was the fact that I'll invite them for a coffee. Yeah. We'll sit down and have a chat about the business. But I actually want to know about their lives as well. And that makes me feel like I can advise them better because I really get down to that kind of personal level with them. I know all about my clients and their lives. And that's what I wanted to kind of keep the humanity within my business, as well as kind of enabling everything that we can do with the tech.
I totally, totally get that, because I strongly agree. Even it doesn't matter what you do, in fairness, whether it's, you know, accountancy or insurance, whatever it may be that you're doing, it's the unimportant stuff that matters. So it's like the things that aren't relevant to exactly what you're doing are the things that are you're going to get to know the client on a level you wouldn't normally. And then you're gaining trust, you're getting to know and sort of expect what's going to be coming because of the way they act or what they like to do, or, you know, you just build such a stronger relationship with them. So I totally agree with that. How old was Bonnie when you went like self-employed?
So she'll have been 7. It was 2019 that I first set up my own business. At that time, I kept 2 days in part-time employment, with a larger accountancy practice. So I did that with their full support. They didn't want me to leave when I handed my notice in. I intended to go fully self-employed at that point, but I was very scared to do so, obviously, because then all of a sudden there's no guaranteed income. Yeah. So we kind of came to an arrangement that worked for us both, really. They got to keep me 2 days a week. And as I say, Bonnie was seven at that point. So I did 2 days a week for them until right in the midst of the pandemic when they made me redundant. And that's when I went full-time self-employed, which is just coming up to a year.
What, like redundant, like on good terms, or redundant as in like you bastards?
Well, basically, so as I say, when I said that I was leaving, they didn't want me to leave. We came up with this 2 days a week that could work for us both. So I did quite specialist work for them, kind of focusing on Sage Support, which is one of the softwares we use that I've got a lot of experience in. So it was working for both of us because I was setting up my own business, obviously had contracts in place to say that I couldn't like approach their client base. When the pandemic hit, I say they kind of used it as a restructuring process, which is all well and good. And I understand why they did it. But they basically said to me, we either want you back full time or we're going to have to let you go. So that's that kind of how that came about. So we did part on good terms, and I still do a little bit of subcontract work for them now and then if it's kind of my speciality and they're struggling for somebody. But it was a massive shock.
I hope your rates are higher than what they were paying you.
Yeah. Well, this is it, isn't it? Like, you can't have it both ways. So, yeah, it was a massive shock, really. But on the back end of that, I think it gave me that final push. It was like the bit that I didn't dare quite do to go fully self-employed. That's it. I was like forced into it. And do you know what? I've never looked back. It was the best decision. It was the right time to do it. I had a small client base, but I was ready to expand. The income, you know, yeah, it was scary at first, but before I knew it, I was making, you know, equal to what I was making when I was full-time for a practice anyway. And obviously now it's kind of the sky's the limit kind of thing, and I can take it as far as I want.
Sometimes it comes, I know not everyone agrees with that, but it's like everything happens for a reason. I really do believe in that. Yeah. And when that did happen, you got made redundant, there was probably a lot of negatives to it, and you probably shit yourself because of the pandemic. But at the same time, it gives you that, like, you have to, it's fight or flight, isn't it?
That was exactly
it. Is that the saying, fight or flight?
Fight or flight, yeah. It's like you can either run away from it, and I could have ran away and gone, oh gosh, I need to get like another employed job for a couple of days a week to get that guaranteed income still. Yeah,
especially during like the pandemic as well, like what a time to do it, because it was so uncertain.
Yeah, it was. But obviously the industry that I'm in, it was like business was booming from a respect of like clients. I had a lot of new clients on the back end of COVID that weren't getting the support they needed from their accountant. And they really needed that human kind of element. They needed to be able to pick up the phone and all the rest of it. So it did actually work quite well.
Do you think, I was thinking about this the other day, that loads of people have actually started their own business, and it's so weird, and it's like going back to that thing of like you get put in a position where you have to do it. So like there's been so many people, like God love them, who've lost the job or come out of like the usual employment they would be in, and they've been like, what do I do? If I don't do something for me, I'm not going to do anything and I'm going to be skinned. So they start doing it, but then it's turned into actual businesses that they're not going to go back to, which is amazing. Is there been an influx in new self-employed people during the pandemic?
Yeah, I feel like there definitely has, and exactly what you were just saying. I think sometimes you get thrown into a position whereby people were like, what am I going to do? You know, I've been made redundant. But then they kind of follow the dreams because they think, right, well, I've always wanted to do this self-employed, or I wonder if I could make this work. And it's, again, it's given them that final push to actually try to do it. And then similar to myself, once you're in it and you're enjoying the work that you're doing, and it's going, you know, it's all working out, you're like, why have I not done this before? So I think it has kind of forced people to adapt, but there's definitely been an influx of people going self-employed,
COVID changed the goalpost, didn't it? Like, it stuff messed the game up completely and made people, it unsettled everyone. And
absolutely,
that one positive thing to come from it is that people have had to adapt. And like you said there, probably the only time or the only opportunity they've ever had since leaving school, I think, right, I'm going to do what I want to do, because there's nothing else to do now. Like, I can't.
Exactly. And I think it put things into perspective for a lot of people as well about what is important. And obviously people had a lot of time off with children and what have you. They were on furlough. And then people that were then subsequently made redundant after being on furlough, they wouldn't necessarily want to go back to a 9-to-5 job or working evenings or whatever it was they were doing before, because they've experienced what life can be like when you do spend that extra time with the children.
Oh, it was gorgeous. So like that time, it felt like, I feel like it's going to be like, you know, when you're like, your grandparents just talk about the war and the Blitz, like, yeah, it's going to be like when we were older, it'd be like, oh, well, that time when we couldn't leave the house and we had to sit in and bake bread. Like,
that's it though, isn't it? Like, when else would that ever happen in life? You're never going to go through that again where the children are not at school. It's just unheard of.
It was, and so, and that you're not like you're not, it's not like a, obviously when the kids are off school, sometimes you put olders in, so you're at home and stuff, but you're always like on the go. You've got like days out doing stuff. I've never ever been sat in the house with the kids for that long. And it was so, it was gorgeous. Don't get me wrong. I remember sitting, saying to my husband all the time, oh, so nice this, like actually not having anything to do. Because again, like you got forced into realizing, like, actually all the stuff you do and running about all the time doesn't, you know, you don't need to do it because you're getting by fine exactly as you are now.
Yeah.
And like one thing it did do for me in terms of putting perspective is I used to really struggle with, you know, obviously when you're running a business and you've got kids and you've got their things that they need to do, and then you've got friends and you've got family and events. And I used to feel so bad, like, because if I missed an event or I couldn't do something, I'd be like, oh no, I've got to work it around. I've got to do it and like put myself out. Whereas now, since COVID, I think, you know what? I need to spend more time with my family, like at home.
Yeah.
So if I don't want to do something, I just say, no, I can't. I'm like, I'm going to be with the kids. You know, it took away that guilt.
That's exactly it. It is. It's a guilt trip. And I think, like, we do have this huge issue with saying no to something. And also we feel like we always have to put a reason behind it. You know, if you get invited to something and you're like, oh, what can I say that I've got going on so that I don't have to do that? Because actually I just don't
COVID. I can't come.
Yeah, that's it. It's like you feel like you need an excuse, whereas really you should just be able to say, no, I'm not going to come to that.
It's hard, isn't it, to do that? Because when you're like a people pleaser, and you want, like, you don't want to upset people, you sort of get yourself in that routine. I admire people. Like, I've got friends who do it. I'll just go, no, I can't be asked.
And you're like, what?
How would you have the balls to just say that? Yeah. You can't be asked. How rude. And they're like, well, no, I can't be asked. I don't want to. Like, I'm going to sit in. Whereas now, I'm going to do like that.
Yeah, and it should be okay to do it. You know, there's no reason why we should feel that we have to spread ourselves so thinly between family, friends, children, you know, everything that we've got going on. Something has to give at some point. And I think, like, before you know it, you can easily kind of get yourself in a burnout position where you're just trying to please everyone else and just not looking after yourself. It's really easy position to get into.
Yeah, it's literally like, I'm looking at it, I've got a big massive poster of it now. It's the logo of the Money Making Mothers. Is that she's got so many things that she's holding? It's like, how do I manage all of these things? And it's trying to keep them all afloat when really, when it comes to the crunch, you've got something has got to give. And 9 times out of 10, it probably would be your social life, wouldn't it? Because, it's like the exercise. Funny enough, I was on the way when I took Jackson to school. I said, he's been saying he wants to get a 2-pack, he's only 10. We said, oh, okay, 2 packs. We've got like a bit of gym stuff in the garage. And I said, right, well, you need to do it every day. Do a little bit every day. And he looked at me, I said, it's a need to be consistent. Otherwise, what's the point? And he looked at me, went, is that why you never lose weight, mum? And I was like,
brilliant. Yeah.
I looked at him and went, well, actually, I said, well, I've got this. I started reeling off all these things and I thought, hold on. And then in the end, I went, no, Jackson, you're right. You know, you're right. You've just given me my own like advice back to me. I've got to do it. So I was like, right, you need to help mum now. You need to get me motivated. Wake me up on the morning and we'll go first thing. And he was like, all right, okay. But it's like that, like my give is always exercise. I'm like, oh, well, if I can't do that, that's the last thing on the list that I can like get round to doing.
Yeah, that's the thing that drops off the back end. And that's exactly it, isn't it? We prioritise what's important to us at the end of the day, and then something else has to give on the back end of that.
Yeah, it's usually something to do with us, but never mind. So how do you juggle then, obviously working now and with Bonnie? Like, how is it? How do you structure life?
So, I mean, basically I work within school hours, always work within school hours. But I find myself logging back on in the evenings, which I say it wasn't my intention. It kind of was, to be honest. My intention was always to be able to pick her up from school myself, come home and have that time with her and in the house, doing everything else that you have to do to run a home and with your child. And then when she's gone to bed in the evening, I often log back on. And a lot of the time people say to me like, oh, Sam, you work too much, or you put yourself under so much pressure. Are you sure you haven't taken too much on? But people don't see that kind of gap. So from like 3 o'clock till 8 o'clock, I might not be anywhere near the computer. I might ignore calls, text clients and say, I'll get back to you, you know, tomorrow morning or later on this evening. So I really do just kind of make the business work around my life instead of my life having to kind of adapt around work. And I think I spent so many years in employment very much kind of finding the childcare to work around the hours, or, you know, just like trying to juggle everything. And actually it was kind of, it can become very easily that it's the family life that kind of slips.
Yeah.
And it's that, oh, I can't go to that event or Christmas plays or whatever it might be. You're like, I can't do it because I've already asked for something this week. Whereas now I nip off if I need to, and I can do that. So I can arrange all my client meetings and everything for a time that suits me and my life. That's the bit that, you know, obviously I have to adapt to the clients as well and make sure I can be available for them. But 9 times out of 10, they're very happy to have meetings within school hours anyway, because they've got their own family. Or actually, they quite like having an evening phone call, because, you know, they're out working their business day to day. And then if I say, oh, do you know what I can do in evening? They're often like, oh, if you could do like 8 p.m. when I've got the kids to bed, that'd be brilliant. So actually, it kind of works both ways. So yeah. I very much just
kind of adapt it.
Yeah, that's it. Everyone is in the same boat. And I think, again, COVID kind of really brought that forward, where people were a lot more forgiving. You know, if you said, oh, well, I've got my little one here, I'm doing homeschooling, so can we speak this evening? They were like, oh, yeah, I'm really glad you said that, because I'm in the same position.
Yeah, I had Charlotte Wilson was on a couple of weeks ago, and she said something which I agree with completely. It doesn't really matter when the work gets done, as long as it gets done. So
that's exactly it.
If some people, like, I don't switch off till about 11, 12 o'clock. I just don't. I never have done it. Four kids. I was never like a big sleeper.
Yeah.
So I like get stuff that I can't get done when the kids are there, when they go to sleep. And it's the same thing in any industry, really, as long as you can do it. If you can do the work 11 to 10 or 11, it doesn't matter, as long as it's done.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. And that's what I think a lot of employers are becoming kind of, obviously, again, on the back end of the pandemic, are becoming kind of aware that they have to adapt to that kind of flexible working. But I just don't think you can beat the fact that when you're self-employed, you can literally work whenever you want. Like I'll often stay up late working, but then sometimes it fits in better with me to get up really early and do like an hour or two before I start getting ready to take her to school and stuff. So it is just that kind of adaptability, and for me, I just can't beat it.
So in terms of, apart from the pandemic, what has been, not just to do with being self-employed, but what has been the biggest struggle for you and motivation for you to like want more?
I think it's just that guilt factor, really, of that juggling act. So like, I think it's really easy to get comfortable again. So like now I'm lucky enough to be able to say the financially, I can kind of live the life that I was living when I was in employment. And I think it can be quite easy to sit comfortable with that and not try and push yourself any harder, or to kind of be fearful of pushing harder. So I'm doing this on my own at the minute. I don't have any staff. And the next step for me is going to be taking on staff members. So it's like that, sit back and think about it. Like, do I want that responsibility? Is it going to make life more hectic? Where really, that is the next step of the business. And if I want more freedom and more flexibility, I'm going to have to take that hard time of taking on staff, making sure they understand the systems and processes, making sure I've got the right staff members in place to then give myself that more freedom, and obviously the financial benefits of the staff doing the work. So I think it's just about kind of keeping the aim in the forefront of your mind and always having that kind of clear goal. So I know that I don't want to stop yet, and that I do want to have staff, But I think it would be quite easy at this point to see that as a really scary thing and sit comfortable, because I am making enough not to have, you know, the most amazing holidays and drive a brand new car, but I'm certainly making enough now that I can live the life I'm used to living. So I think it's just about kind of keeping that. What do you want long term?
Yeah. And what, and if everyone's, everyone's want is different, isn't it? So as long as you've got, like you said there, a lifestyle that you're comfortable with, you know, sometimes I think people get very like not confused, but it's like misjudged that if you're self-employed, it's because you want to be a millionaire, a billionaire, whatever it might be. Yeah. It's not always the case. Like you've just said there, you're earning, say for example, when you were earning, working 40 hours a week and earning £10,000, say, just for arguments, now you're working 5.5 hours a day, but earning the same amount of money. Why would you not, who would not want to do that? Like it's, you're getting more value for your time. And it's, as long as you're comfortable, like with what your lifestyle is and how you've achieved it. And as long as you're managing it again with like getting out of time, what you want, time with the children, being able to go away, pick when you work, then it's, your life's very rich just as that.
Yeah.
It's not always about the value of what you're bringing in. It's about what that freedom and flexibility does in terms of richness to your life.
It absolutely is. And I think that's kind of something that we have to be careful of as well. Like when it comes to social media and things like that, it's very easy to look at what other people are doing in your industry and almost think, oh, well, they're doing that. You know, they're working this many hours, or they've got an office, or they've grown their business a lot quicker than I have. And I think you've got to remember that everybody's different, everybody's life's different, and everybody's aims are different.
Yeah.
You know, some people are not going to stop and they really want the, you know, the amazing lifestyle, and they want to be rich, basically. They want to take it as far, and that they're aiming for that £1 million turnover and everything, which is brilliant, like, you know, fair play to them. But I think it's very important to kind of stay grounded and stay true to yourself.
No, definitely, 1,000,000%. That's the problem with when you're comparing yourself. It should be, you know, your lane's taking you to your destination. Someone else might be going a hell of a lot faster, but they might not stop where you're going to stop. It all depends on what you want. So try and not compare yourself is hard, but it's so important, because you just remember why you're doing it and what you're wanting to get out of it, because your whys are not the same as someone else's.
You don't
understand it, and you shouldn't need to understand it. As long as you understand your own, that's all that matters. What has been the hardest part then? What's been the biggest struggle for you?
I have to focus on the pandemic, because obviously
if I'm ignoring
homeschooling and that juggle, I think it'd have to be the financial side. I mean, obviously I work in financial, you know, that's what I do. I deal with people's money all day, every day, look at people's accounts, but also look at people. I mean, one bit of starting self-employment that I always tell people is, don't focus on the sales that you need to get, as in the turnover. Focus on that bottom line, because the net profit of what you need to take out to live as a bare minimum, you've got to focus on that and then kind of work upwards from that. You know, there's no point having a £1 million turnover business if actually the net profit's only 20 grand at the end of the year, and that's not enough for you to live on. So I think for me, it was actually taking my own advice with that and taking kind of everything back to a bare minimum and saying, right, this is what I'm used to earning, having worked in practice for so long, but actually, what do I need to live on? And I think just kind of adapting to getting used to financially just being dependent on it's not predictable income.
Yeah.
And although I can advise people all day long about how to manage that and cash flow forecasts and everything, when it actually comes to doing it yourself, it's still very scary. So I'd say that has to be the thing that like really stands out, as when you're just there on your own two feet thinking, right, well, this is what I need to earn. You know, you're just dependent on yourself at the end of the day.
Yeah, no, totally. I get that. It's scary as hell. Like this, I'm literally responsible for making sure this comes in. Like,
that's it. Yeah, it is. And it's a huge thing. It really is. When you know, I think it's very easy to, when you know that you're getting a set salary every month from an employer, you don't worry about things quite the same, even if you are slipping into overdraft or you know that you've got a credit card to pay at the end of the month. It feels different because you know exactly what you're getting at the end of the next month.
There's nowhere near as much urgency. You can cost a hell of a lot more. I've done both, and it doesn't matter what's going on. It's a lot more comfortable. Some people need that comfortability, but there's nowhere near as much stress and fear when you're as when you're employed to being self-employed, because all on your head. If you don't,
But then, like on the other side to that, from a positive point of view, I'm a lot better with personal finances now because of that. Because you know you haven't got that guaranteed, the buffer that I force myself to keep in the business bank account, as that's kind of the danger point that I don't want to go below, is a lot higher than it would have been if I was employed. You know, I wouldn't be bothered really if I got down to almost zero at the end of the month, because I knew that salary was coming. Whereas now I have a figure in my head and I know that, you know, that's my buffer. So if I have a month where there's not as much work coming in, it's going to be all right. So I think from that point of view, it's actually been really positive from kind of a personal finance point of view.
And it does, I don't know about anyone else, but like for me, it's like when they say that you live to the payday, like you live to that payday and then you're like watching it go down and down and thinking, all right, well, it's coming again in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then it comes again. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're self-employed, it's like the really, because it's not set guaranteed, you're sort of on a much more of a bigger uphill push, which is good and bad, because obviously if you're wanting to just like chill, people like to go to work, not worry, know they're getting paid and that's the end of it, same every month, great. I'm wired differently, like I like the game, it's like a chase.
Yes,
like
it is.
What can we do? Where the next step? What's going to come next? What am I after? And you're trying to constantly go over hurdles, but there's so much satisfaction in when you get over them hurdles and being like, oh class, I earned double what I earned when I was employed. There is a lot of negatives to it, but there's so much more positives in my opinion, because it just doesn't let you don't let up, you don't become comfortable, you're hungry.
That's exactly it. You don't become complacent with your work, do you? Because you know that if you start a new venture or a new aspect to your business, that's going to bring you the money in. Whereas when you're working for somebody else, it's quite easy to think, I could probably do that, you know, I could push that bit harder, or I could suggest this for their business. But when it's your own bank account that's feeling the kind of benefits of the actions you take, you're a lot more inclined to do it and to just push harder in general.
So have you had any knobhead clients then?
Knobhead clients, that's a good question. do you know, I feel like I've been really lucky on that point. There are some, I think the thing for me as an accountant that we see is when a client comes along and they'll ask you for a quote for their job, you'll talk to them and kind of work out that actually this one's going to be hard work. It might be that they just want to literally dump a bag of receipts on you every week, which is fine. And it's a service that I do offer for people that don't want to touch anything. But it's when they're either not being honest about it, because in my mind, it's a two-way relationship. If you're both honest from the start and you set your expectations, then that relationship's going to work a lot better. But when a client pretends that they're really organized and then actually they don't have a clue what's going on in the business and they just want to dump receipts on you, you get kind of a fee that's not suited to the work, and then you have to go back to the client and say, look, this wasn't your end of the deal. In terms of knobhead clients, I think it has to be the prospects that come to you and say things like, I'm not happy with my current accountant, they've messed this up, or I'm not happy with my current accountant because they never get back to me emails, I can never get hold of them, which is something that we come across a lot. And then you'll give them a quote for your services and then they're like, oh my god, that's double what I'm paying now. It's like, yeah, but you just told me that what you're paying now isn't good enough for you.
Yeah.
So if you want better, you've got to pay more. And especially the ones where they come and say, oh, my accountant's got me all these penalties, they've submitted something late. And then they're like, oh, your fees are a fair few £100 more a year. You're like, yeah, but that's how much you paid in penalties with that previous accountant, because they weren't doing what they needed to do for you. And I think there's been a few like that. Jobs that I haven't won or whatever, but then you just think, well, they're probably not the type of client you want to work with anyway, because they're wanting everything for nothing. And also they'll probably be back because they're going to stick with the same accountant and have the same problems again, or they're going to go to another accountant that's really proactive and they're going to get a similar fee quote and then be in the same position.
Yeah, but that it is frustrating that, because it's like, it's different, isn't it, when say so you get a build around and they're building you something, you can see what they're doing, like you get it. Like it's like, oh, $5,000 to build that wall, that you see the wall. Whereas when you're paying someone in terms of for a service and you don't actually see the work that goes in, it's like, oh, well, that's what you do. Like, why isn't it cheap? And I'm not going to lie, when I went self-employed and then went limited and I was like, I seen the difference in price, I was like, dear God. Like, like a big
thing.
But at the end of the day, I know I can't do it. So it's like, you pay the expert to do it, or you try and do it and probably fuck it up, and then it ends up where it costs you more money anyway. So just pay to do it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it's things like that, exactly what you just explained, like the difference between preparing a set of sole trader accounts to a set of limited accounts. It's huge in terms of what we have to do, you know, and there's so much more to disclose in a set of limited company accounts. And sometimes I think a lot of that, to get over that kind of fee barrier, is to actually show the client what you mean, you know, have a sample set of accounts, obviously without the client's actual data in, and actually show them the extra that has to go in, and also make sure that they understand the benefits of having the accountant there, you know, from a tax point of view. If you don't have the accountant there, would you know how to take your money best out of the company and things like that? But I think you're absolutely right in that it's hard for them to see the value sometimes.
It honestly is. Like, I was guilty for it as well, and until for a coffee with my accountant and he tried to explain, it probably got about two sentences deep and I was like, stop, it's fine. I don't even want to, like, tax baffles my brain. No matter how much I sit and read or how much I try and get my head around it, it baffles my brain. I just can't get it. Just does, you know, when something just doesn't sit in properly. So I don't want to even try. I'm not going to ever be an accountant. Let the accountant do the accountancy and I'll concentrate on doing what I do.
That's it. And I think once you've got that trust with your accountant, at the end of the day, it's all about trust, and you need to have that trust, especially like what you just said, if you really don't want to get involved with understanding the nitty gritty of the tax, then you've got to trust them that they're doing their best for you and that every move they make is, you know, beneficial to you. And I think once you've got that trust there, they become like an important part of your business.
Oh, God, yeah. Honestly, I WhatsApp voice note my accountant probably once a week saying, what's this? I need this. What's this? And he's just like, oh, my God, I know for a fact he thinks, Jesus, why did I take her on? Because I'm annoying ass.
But again, though, we appreciate that at least you're honest about that. Like, you've just said that that's what you do. You're not pretending to be like a really laid back client that doesn't need that support. So then it's fine, isn't it? Because everybody knows like what the situation is.
It was hilarious. I went with him over COVID and I had a Zoom meeting and he was like, right, okay, tell me. I said, I'm just going to give you a warning in advance. I am a nightmare. Like, I'm a nightmare. I said, I'm too honest, I'm too straight, and I'll tell you and I'll nag. And he was like, all right, okay. And I was like, right, so that's it. That's all I need to say from my end.
And he's on the table.
He jokes now. He's like, oh, like, you weren't taking the piss, were you, when you said you were hard work? I'm like, no, I told you, I'll make you work for it. What in terms of, like, for the future, obviously, I know you said you want to take on staff and you want to hopefully grow so that you hopefully get a passive income, so you also have that extra bit of money where you don't have to worry about you working as much. What would you want Bonnie to take from everything, from what you've done and the decisions you've made in your career and your life? How would you want her to view them and take for herself?
I think it'd have to be to follow your dreams, and I know that sounds like really cliche, but there are a lot of steps along the way that I could have sat back and gone, I can't do this. Like, it's too scary. I don't want this, you know, I don't want the stress of the self-employment. So I think I'd want her to just be able to follow her dreams and really believe in herself. And then once she'd taken that journey, whatever it is that she wants to do in future, I think I just want her to remember that the only race you're in is the one against yourself, and to just not worry what anybody else is doing in life or in business, and just focus on your own goals and just push hard for what you want without worrying, you know, what everybody else around you is doing.
I love that. I love that quote. It's really nice. Well, I'm pretty sure she'll get that from you because you seem very grounded.
Oh, thank you. Like, that was a massive compliment.
No, you did. Like, very, like, you seem very calm and, like, together. Like,
not all the time, I won't lie to you.
What's it like as mum? Are you different between like business and mum?
I don't think so, no. I think the two things cross over quite a bit. If everything's organised and I've got a to-do list in life and in business, you know, then I'm fine. If somebody took my diary away from me, I wouldn't have a clue what day PE, sports day, everything was. So long as I'm organised and I stick to a structure, I'm all right. But at the same time, I have to, like, pull myself back and remember that you do have to have a bit of life that's not on a to-do list, you know, and that you can be spontaneous. But so long as I know what's going on and I've got time to prepare, yeah, no, I'm all right. I can handle it.
It is, like, honestly, the list for outside. Like, my two are going to different schools and they've got PE both on different days, different like apps, like, for the notifications. Yeah. And you're like, there's been so many times, not loads, I'd probably say like about five times in the last like 2 years where I've had a phone call going, Carla, it's on close day today. And you're like, you're like going down to school with like clothes for on.
Yep.
Got to a point where like one of the kids' teaching assistants, she goes to my eldest son's football and she'd like WhatsApp me, you know, like on a morning and be like, by the way, it's this day. Like, thank God for you, because I like completely, because unless it's like in front of you, it's weird for me. Like if I come in the office and I've got a list every night, I do a list before I finish of what I need to do the next day. Whereas with like life and stuff, because with the kids there's so many different things to be like controlling, I feel like I need a list, but not like a list, like a whiteboard in the passageway or something, you know, like, so it's there in front of you all the time.
Yeah.
I might actually do that. I might get a massive vision, like a vision board type thing, but like a to-do list of what's going on that week. Yeah. So we have one of them calendars, but you whizzing past the calendar like every day. Yeah. Like, I never actually stand and look at it.
Yeah, and it is. It's about that visual thing, though, isn't it? It's like if you hang something near the front door to remind you what you know that you need to do something, and you've got to do it. You've got to just find your way of remembering, because there is so much to remember. And I think, especially with school, like it's easy to, you don't want that image of that busy working mum. You know, that busy working mum.
I've definitely well and truly got that. I've been stamped there.
Yeah, you feel guilty for it. Where actually, we're showing our children that you exactly what your podcast is all about, Carla, that you can have it all. And it's true. And we're teaching them that actually you can juggle all these things. And yeah, all right, every now and then you might drop something, but at the end of the day, it's not actually important, is it? And you always sort it out somehow. You know, if you forget to send them with the right clubs, it always gets sorted one way or another. Yeah. We put too much pressure on ourselves.
Honestly. But it is, you are right. It's true. Like, what's the worst that's happened? We all make mistakes. It's not a big deal. It's just, that's just life, isn't it? I'm sure. Even if I wasn't working full time, I would probably still forget shit, because you just do. Like, no one's perfect.
We're only human, aren't we? And you can't be the best at every element of life all the time. We all think superwoman, but you can't do it. Something has to give. And if it doesn't, it's your health that suffers, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Yeah, you just sat shaking in the corner at the end of
that. That's it. Can't take any more. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, thanks very much for today, love. I've really enjoyed it. And it's been really nice of you to take time out of your schedule to speak with everyone.
You're so welcome. It's been my absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You have been listening to the Money Making Mothers podcast with Carla Edwards. If you have enjoyed the show, then leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Make sure to tune in next time, and don't forget, you can have it all.